I'm Joshua Simon.
I'm Sam Joe.
And we are
the SG Boys,
that little gay podcast from Singapore.
Subscribe and find us on Instagram at the SG Boys.
Been a while since you and I sat across each other. But the truth is, there was a recording.
Yeah, this is like deja vu, right?
But we are not releasing it.
Yeah, we're not releasing it.
So here's what happened, right? Sam Joe stormed off. He threw his cup of water at me. And he yelled, "This is why Kennedy left."
And then I left. And I slammed the door.
Yes.
And then I came back because I forgot my phone. And then I left again.
Very Sam Joe thing to do.
Yeah.
No. So we, because you've been working hard, you know, you've been performing the house down.
Hustling.
And
so have you.
Thank you.
Yeah. You've been very busy, I know.
Yeah, and we ended up spending, I think, one of the longest recording sessions ever just talking about music and pop culture.
We went down a big, wide, gaping, deep rabbit hole.
To a point where by the end we were like, do we have enough content?
And I think the problem was we had too much content that kind of went nowhere.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a dream, right? You know when you have those dreams that go from tangent to tangent, mm-hmm. and then when you wake up, you're like, what was that about?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. But maybe it'll be something that we'll save for now, and then one day, like 10 years from now, we'll auction it off.
I love it. Like
for charity.
Like a lost episode.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, like the Sugar Babes when they released the lost tape.
Mariah Carey and the Rarities.
The Rarities.
Okay, we gotta start. Otherwise, we're gonna do the same thing.
We're just doing what we did earlier.
Yeah.
Again, like we're re-recording. It's like Josh and Sam Joe's version.
Remix and reimagine.
So yeah, just to set the record straight, there's no beef.
No.
The podcast is still alive. A lot of people have been asking me, what's happening? Like, you know, are you not recording anymore? Because I think our last released episode was in January.
It was a while back.
In the blink of an eye, it's April.
Madonna lied when she said time goes by so slowly.
So slowly.
I want to say time flew by because we were having a ball all the time. We were having so much fun. But I think priority for the two of us has always been, you know, like we want to make sure that we're okay.
Yeah.
You know, we take this podcast very seriously. We don't want to put out stuff that is just, as much as we would love to just talk about the 90s.
Yeah.
For like 2-3 hours.
Because we could.
We really can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think we had to fight our own fires for a while.
Yeah, that's true. We want to make sure that what we put out is of a certain quality and that, you know, y'all wouldn't just doze off. I mean, one, y'all to listen, lah. And we want you to actually enjoy this.
So let's start with a little catch up. Where are we right now in terms of the fires that we've been fighting?
I've been kind of like on a break. I think I realized that I wasn't always putting my mental health first. And so I think I've been, you know, putting in the work there. And I think you can hear from my tone. I think the last time I was here or so with you, I was kind of zoning out a little from time to time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I'm a lot more present now. And I'm a lot more ready to take on the world again. But, you know, as with all things, we're always a work in progress. But I like to say, yeah, I'm happy to say that I'm definitely on the mend. And I mean, you can also see from my social media, like I'm back again. Like I'm out and about, you know, I am putting myself out there again, like embracing, you know, life.
Yeah.
As I usually do.
What would you say helped keep you afloat?
Oh, you know, I've decided that I want to keep swimming.
Mm.
Yeah, I've decided I want to keep swimming and I decided that the world is still my oyster or slash my swimming pool or ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever this metaphor is going, even if I'm scuba diving or diving sometimes, I'm still coming up for air and I'm still appreciating everything else that's all around, you know. As Fergie once sang, right? I need to be with myself and center, clarity, peace, serenity.
Well, Sam Joe's singing again, so all is well in the kingdom.
Yeah. Actually, that's true. For a while, I was like, I didn't even have the will to sing, you know. I was like, I was just very tired. Like, actually, that's one way to know, you know, you can hear that my voice is raspy again. It means I've been doing what?
Karaoke.
Yes, going for a lot of violent karaoke and among other things. I don't like that I'm speaking in so many platitudes. I just, there's certain things which I would prefer not to share at the moment. So I can't go into specifics, But you asked me how
because she's a celebrity. Do you understand? She's a celebrity. She has to be careful with her choice of words.
Yeah. Speaking of celebrities, how about you?
Stop.
Go.
I've been very well. I remember being in this room and struggling with my anxiety for a while and trying to like pick myself back up and put myself back together. And things are very good. I just came back from my first family trip since I was a kid to Japan.
How was that?
It was a lot because I grew up with a lot of friends in school who would always go on vacations with their families, right? And we were never that family. And I spent many, many years resenting my family, even at one point saying that I hated my dad. So the idea of like going on vacation with them, just the three of us, I would have never believed it that this would happen. It was quite life-changing for me and my parents as well. It was their first time in Japan. I got to introduce my favorite city to my parents,
mm-hmm.
and also experience something new because I went to Kyoto for the first time. I had to watch a lot of videos on how to control your temper and not lose my cool.
Ooh.
Because my parents kept eating at McDonald's and Starbucks. Like, hey, what do you want to have for breakfast? Oh, Starbucks ah. Oh. And I was like, Dad, we're in Japan. You right. know, like, let's go somewhere cool, you know. And I first time I brought them to Shibuya, I said, okay, 30 minutes. We're going to let you just get lost and explore on your own. Okay, we'll meet back here at 5:30. They went to Uniqlo.
I mean, a Japanese brand, so valid.
Still,
valid.
I was like, you have it at Ion. You know, like, why come all the way here? So I had to like really keep my calm. And my dad has a habit of like wandering off when he sees something in the distance. And then my mom, she has issues with her leg. So it was something that I kind of realized during the trip as well. My dad kind of pulled me to the corner and was like, we're not going to be able to take more of these trips in the future because you can see she's not able to walk like she used to. And she's trying to keep it together, you know, so just try to keep calm and not bring attention to it. So it would take a long time just to come out of a train station, you know, because we have to find the elevator and then come out. And Japan's not like you can call a grab everywhere, you know, you got to walk, you got to take the train. She can't carry her luggage, so I got to carry her luggage for her. So I found myself being more protective of my parents. It's, I don't know if you've experienced this before, but it's like after a certain age, parents become like children.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, there's a bit of a role reversal there, right? I've had a similar experience before as well.
Yeah they're like kids.
Yeah.
They like run around, they want to walk here and walk there. They don't tell you where they are going.
Yeah. They're in a different phase of their lives. You know what I mean? So they are well-functioning adults at this point. Touch wood, thank you. And hopefully it stays that way, right? It's just that maybe that wasn't your idea of what your trip was going to turn out like. You didn't think that, oh, you'd be spending time at McDonald's or Starbucks or Uniqlo, right? Even though Japan's McDonald's has like special stuff.
Everything is much better in Japan.
Yeah. It's one of those like expectations versus reality. Yeah. You know, so.
No, I mean it in a very endearing way. Like they have this sense of wonder about everything. They're not thinking too much about like, oh, we're supposed to stick together. Otherwise, we're going to lose one another. So I'm constantly like looking around, trying to make sure everyone stays together. I'm almost like protecting them as much as possible. We took a few taxis, even though taxis are very expensive in Japan, but I just knew that, okay, we needed to get to the hotel, you know, because they're tired and they need to eat at a certain time. My dad's diabetic, so everything has to be according to how their health, what they require, you know. So I learned a lot from that trip. It was also very painful to realize that, yeah, I'm not sure if I can get this again.
Right.
And it's not something where we can like plan to go like next year again, you know, because I don't know how my mom's health is going to be like as well. I remember there was this moment we were like walking in Kyoto and I was trying to like, okay, I have to like embrace this moment because like time is slipping away. The days are coming to an end. We're going to fly back to Singapore soon, like try to embrace. And I didn't know how. I was like, what it like? It's not like a physical thing. You can just grab time and just like hug it and be like, okay, stay like this for a while. I'm very happy to say at least that there were no blow-ups. No one got angry at one another. When they were at McDonald's, I was annoyed, but I was like, I'll see you in 20 minutes, you know? And I said it with a smile and I walked away, you know? So I'm happy that we have that memory. And since coming back, my parents have been gushing about Japan to all their friends.
I can tell that, you know, you're really glad this trip happened, even though it didn't go entirely according to plan. I know you had a whole, like, you know, you had a 40-page itinerary mapped out and everything, because I saw your stories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many pages?
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
And I printed it hard copy because they need a hard copy.
Right.
And I took them to a church as well, and I hadn't been to a church in a while. Oh, I can talk about that. I returned to church.
In Japan?
First in Singapore.
Okay.
And I'm not sort of like preaching the gospel here. This is not going to turn into a Yes, Jesus podcast.
Okay.
But I think when it came to my mental health, the last kind of thing that I felt like maybe I needed some help was to maybe go back to church. I just thought I'd try. Because I said for many years that I wouldn't go back to church ever again. So I went to Free Community Church, mm-hmm. which is an LGBT affirming church. Welcome to all church.
Right.
And it was such a surreal experience. And maybe we can interview someone from there at some point. But
yep.
to hear like they're going out and, you know, they're getting food and they're helping like elderly trans people in Singapore. Like I never heard stuff like that in a church mm-hmm. before.
Yeah. But that church I know has been like, you know, doing a lot of good work for quite a while now. So kudos to them, really.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was also on their website recently. I don't know what it was that led me there. Because I mean, I'm not religious whatsoever, right? But I think something led me to like look at their FAQ.
Mm.
And yeah, I thought that it answered quite a lot of questions very well. In terms of like to be gay and stuff like that, doesn't that contradict the Bible? You know, and this is sin and blah blah blah. They had a very like measured way of like approaching these questions.
Yeah.
And an accurate way also, like, you know, so great. I imagine myself like an LGBTQ youth, right? You know, looking for answers in that regard. Like you were all those years ago
yeah.
when you really wanted to keep going to church, but you were like somehow you didn't feel like you belonged.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt? Like it was it like homecoming for you? Or
I think for me, the reason why I actively seeked it out was because I had been consuming a lot of people doing content about like anxiety, depression, and I was consuming all that from a very secular lens. Mm-hmm. But I grew up very religious. My dad's a pastor. And I severed that. And there was a divide between my sexuality and Christianity. Told myself I'll never ever go back to a church ever again, not after what I went through. I thought, okay, why don't I try to view the self-help stuff, the healing stuff, but from a religious perspective. I wanted to go to a space where I could feel I'm welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So I went for a service and my focus was solely just to, I'm here to learn. The benediction at the end, usually they kind of like say a couple of things to kind of like, okay, go forth. This is what we, like the message that I leave you with, like parting words, right? And it was everyone in unison acknowledging that we have done a lot of harm to each other within our communities, that we have divided one another and separated one another. And I was like, I've never heard Christians acknowledging stuff like that. Quite blown away by it. And that made me want to go back to church again. And I took my parents to church in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. And how was church in Tokyo? Was it similar?
I went in, this was not a gay church, right? This is a Baptist church. Switched off anything that would distract me or separate me from why I'm there. There were a lot of things that I was very confused about. There was a lot of shame that I was experiencing in my life. I think when we were talking about my anxiety, a lot of it was to do with shame. And a lot of my shame comes from that divide between my sexuality and Christianity. I'm never going to be good enough for God.
Even till today, like, is that how you feel?
This is a process that I'm still kind of like working through, but
also a work in progress.
Yeah. Right. When we were here the last time and I was talking about my anxiety and I gave this analogy of like trying to scrub myself over and over again, it felt like that. It was this idea that like, if I'm happy and I'm in love, I'm in a relationship, it is still not good enough for God, you know? So knowing that I can still have that relationship with God while also taking from that lessons that I can use in my relationship with my partner, there's that sense of harmony between the two. And that I think has played a huge role in healing a lot of the things that I was struggling to sort out.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're feeling a little bit lighter about it.
Yeah, you know, a lot lighter.
Yeah, you yourself have said, like, now you see that, okay, these two don't necessarily have to oppose each other, right?
Yeah.
That you can, you know, love whoever you want to love and still believe in whatever higher being there is, whatever higher power there is. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Like, you know, because you want both. Why can't you have the best of both worlds? Like, you know, like, I know there will always be people
you gotta,
who tell you that you're wrong. But
you got to pick one, right?
At the end of the day, you got to believe for yourself, like, and decide for yourself what is your truth. what is going to bring you happiness and what can you live with? Because at the end of the day, it's your life, right?
Yeah. So. And I've had to choose over and over again. You know, I used to be very active at church. I used to lead. And I remember being sat down and was told to choose. And I did not choose the church. And it was very painful because it felt as if like I could never choose the church again, you know. And there's so many links to what church is to my life. You know, it's my family. It's my dad's job. It's what he's very passionate about, you know. It was also my community of friends that I'd gotten to know. So all that was kind of like severed.
So were you like Madonna excommunicated from the church?
Stop.
No, I'm curious. And how old were you when that happened?
Well,
when you were told that, oh, you have to.
That was the first time when I think I was 16 or 17. But then the more recent one, which is why we started this podcast, was, you know, because my dad was running to be the head pastor of a church, and then someone wrote an anonymous letter and outed me to his deacons and elders and the colleagues and everything. And basically, I'll never forget this thing. So my dad said something to me during that period, and I don't know if I ever shared it on the podcast, but he said, I knew that my days in the ministry was numbered the moment I saw you back in church, because I knew people were going to use you against me. I'll never forget that because it really hurt, and I don't blame him. I went back to church because in 2019, I too was looking for God. But from that simple cry for help, it became a way to attack my own family, even without me doing anything. Just being at church was enough for people to use that against my family. So that's why I was like, okay, well then I'll never go back to church. You right. know?
So it's kind of like just as you were healing from what happened to you when you were 16, 17, you know, even as recently as a few years ago, I mean, you were probably on some sort of a healing journey already then, but
yeah.
even as recently as when we started this podcast, it came back in a different way and form.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing telling you like, oh, you do not belong. And by extension, not just you, but now you were made to feel like you were holding your dad back by yeah. just being yourself. That's terrible. That's a terrible way for anyone to feel like, you know, and it's not like you were doing anything wrong.
From their perspective, it's not that way. From yeah. their perspective, I'm the prodigal son. I've gone astray, but that is not true. And this was something that I had to pray about. It was about my partner. When I was talking about sort of eradicating that shame and finding harmony between my sexuality and Christianity, if it is even possible, I got on my knees and I almost pleaded to God, trying to make a case for our relationship, knowing that He already accepts me and accepts us. Whether it's the church or the Bible and what they're saying, or if this is truly how you feel, that we're an abomination, but how I love Him comes from you.
Mm.
Like, you taught me how to love. You taught me how to love unconditionally. You taught me how to give grace and be kind. These are the qualities that I learned from Christianity. And that is what I apply to my relationship. At least this is, once again, my perspective. Christians may not agree with this, but I think all relationships can be sinful, it can be hurtful, whether it's a straight relationship or a gay relationship, whatever it is how you treat each other. I know a lot of people in straight relationships and they can hold hands and they're accepted anywhere, but then a lot of stuff happens behind closed doors and it's disgusting.
Some of my other friends also who happen to be gay or queer, they have found a way to also found a way to reconcile, you know, both their Christian identity and the LGBTQ identity. It's not one or the other, it's both, and they're embracing both, and you're just loving. You needed to go through what you went through to get to this point,
yeah,
in a sense, to kind of appreciate what you have a lot more,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
Yeah, and not feel so angry about it. I think I used to be very angry about all of these things because I was so frustrated and I felt a lot of things were very unfair. And I'm not painting myself as a saint. I'm not asking anyone to feel sorry for me or anything. Because when you're in that place and you're hurt and everything, I'm sure I must have treated people horribly as well. I'm sure I raised my voice and said things that I should not have said to my parents that further severed my relationship with them. But I've stopped trying to be so angry, and I've stopped confusing yelling about things as a way to be heard. I've stopped trying to look for things to tick me off or trigger me or upset me. I'm not looking for these things anymore because I already know exactly what I'm there for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I'm with my parents, I want to spend time with them. If they want to eat at Starbucks, towards the end of the Tokyo trip, I was like, you want McDonald's? I'll buy you McDonald's. This is fantastic sushi. You don't know how to appreciate? Totally fine. We can go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally fine.
Yeah. And by extension, you wanting them to like try other stuff came from a place of very good intention, right? But can't and you shouldn't be controlling people, right?
Yeah,
and
of
I
course. Know,
yeah. And I think that at the end of the day, you just want everyone to be happy. And if that's what makes them happy, sure. You know, if it takes you walking away from a situation or looking the other way and just doing your own thing while they do their own thing, you know, okay, meet back here in 20 minutes. We just go off and like diverge a little bit. It's not exactly according to the itinerary, but again, life is too short to like sweat all the small stuff, you know?
It's just things get lost in translation.
Of course.
Because on my part, like when I go research on all these, like the best sushi, whatever, it's because I want to give them the best. From their perspective, they are good with Hans, Jack's Place. You know, like they're good with the simple, comfortable things that they also think are fantastic enough.
Yeah.
So I learned to just understand, okay, actually, they just want to eat this thing. Let's go get that. So I learned to also see things from their perspective as well.
Exactly. And I think it's also I think it's very sweet. By the way, I love Hans and I love Jack's Place, right? It's I don't know, very nostalgic thing for
exactly,
me.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm not saying like it's, you know, it's Michelin standard or whatever, but yeah, some things are, you know, when it comes to comfort food, right? It's not
cozy.
About yeah, it's yes. not about how objectively good it is on a culinary level. It's more of like, you know, food is very subjective. Same way with music, with art or whatever. It's about like, you know, your emotional relationship with the food or with the venue, with the place sometimes. So yeah, but maybe this is a good learning experience for you also. And I think you touched on it earlier a little bit, but it's kind of like letting go also allows you yourself to enjoy things a little bit more.
Towards the end, I did. When at the start, I was annoyed, you know, but like I didn't vent it. But towards the end, I let a lot of that go. There was a night where my mom was on her own and she walked through Asakusa and she found her way back to the hotel.
Yeah.
But like I did also like make sure her phone was going to be on and it's not on silent mode like it always is. And I also kind of like looked around to know that there are places that she can eat. And I went with my dad, just the two of us, to Shibuya. And that was very surreal to like cross the Shibuya crossing with my dad. And just like watching him react to, for me, it's my favorite place in the whole world. And then I told him like, I'm going to go vinyl shopping, totally not your thing. So go explore, we'll meet back here in like an hour. And we did.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to actually go back to Tokyo. I wanted him to have his own relationship with Tokyo as well. I wasn't trying to sort of like paint everything from just my perspective. And I learned that quite quickly when they did not just follow what I wanted them to do.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. They're going to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It seems like things are looking up.
Yeah.
There I stay.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll continue to go up. But such is life, right? Like our parents are only going to get older. You go from them taking care of us to us babysitting them on trips.
I'm grateful that we at least got that memory though.
Yeah.
Like I know friends who lost their parents very, very early on before they got their full circle moment, before they got their resolution, before they kind of like came into their own senses and realized like, hey, I don't want to be so angry anymore, you know? So like that's something that I'm very, very grateful of.
Yeah.
My parents also could trust me. You know, and that was something that I remember we were sort of hanging out with my dad's friends and after the trip and my dad was showing a lot of appreciation. It was like, oh yeah, Josh really took care of us, you know, like he knew exactly where to go, da da da. It was nice to also see my dad feel proud of me.
Do you think that to some extent why you wanted to be, you know, very prepared and very protective of them was yearning for that approval from him in
yeah,
a sense.
Yeah, like but you, I think not so much of the approval part. I mean, sure, there's definitely that aspect to it. There'll always be that aspect of, father, look what I found. And then you want your dad to react and listen to you and give you all the attention in the world. There'll always be that inner child self-esteem issue. But I think more than that, it was more of like I've never really had my dad feel proud of me. Dad's never gone for any of my things. Parents were there for my sister's graduations. I didn't go to uni. They didn't come for any of my singing performances when I was a teenager. They didn't come for any of my dance things. They never came for... Like, it was always like, oh, it's too secular. He's out in the world. He should not be doing any of these entertainment things. I've not had that. So to have that come in the form of, I'm proud of you because you're taking care of us, that felt very nice. I'm a grown adult. I know how to get around. If you just follow me, I will get us there. Where for so much of my life, it was not like that. It was that if we follow Josh, we're going down the path of destruction and we ought to pray for him.
Yep. Yep.
So on this trip, they were completely helpless. Could not speak Japanese, didn't know where to eat, didn't know where they were, didn't know how to take train, could not rely on the things that they know. So they had to just completely let go. They did. And I didn't shove it in their face. I just said, follow me, I'll get us there. And we did. We got there. And I was quietly very proud of myself. And then my dad was proud of me as well. So that was very nice.
I'm sensing that you really needed that trip.
Oh, yeah. You know, more than I thought.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, we haven't had this since we were, you know, since you were a kid.
But I am going to go back to Tokyo.
What do you mean?
Like in a couple of months' time.
Oh, okay. What's happening?
Have you ever like taken a vacation because you need a vacation after the vacation?
No. I've booked back-to-back trips.
You kind of did pick up on that. Like I was also very hard on myself throughout the whole trip. And I was stressed out. And I didn't allow myself to go to Akihabara, which I love, or Shimokitazawa, which is like a thrift shop town, because I knew there was nothing really there for my parents. So I thought like, okay, well, there's no point us going there. I went straight into tour guide mode. I'm either going there or London with my partner. It's our first trip together overseas.
Okay. There or London. That's two very different.
Because he wants to go to London.
Parts of the world. Okay. And you don't want.
I do.
Okay.
But it's very expensive.
You gotta fight it out. You know, love don't cost a thing.
Well, people who say that are rich. I've listed down all the potential places we might go for our first trip together and also the average daily temperature as well. It's like when my partner was like, hey, we should go on vacation. I was like, okay, here's a keynote presentation.
See? Some people are just like that. We all have that friend or relative who, you know, does up a whole Excel sheet when you...
Yeah.
All you asked for was just a summary.
That is me.
You do. Yeah, exactly. I know. I can tell.
But it's for the sake of everyone.
Yeah, I just didn't want... When I travel in a group, I am so not like that, okay? And this is wild because you're also Gemini.
Yeah.
There must be something else in your big three that's making you... I noticed that a lot of Virgos do this. Like, just 9 out of 10 Virgos that I know... They all do Excel sheet. Then.
Why you gotta bring my stars into this?
It's about what are your big three again?
Gemini, Aquarius, Scorpio.
Okay, I'm not well versed enough. We're gonna have to get an astrologer back.
Astrologer.
Ren. Maybe it's time we bring back one of our former guests for like a reprise.
Yeah, or if you are a self-proclaimed astrologer.
Actually, Jensen, whom we had on for the sex episode.
Yeah.
Let's talk about sex episode.
Doesn't he live in London? Good.
He lives in London. So if you do go there with your boyfriend, and he's very, very good at like these things. He's given me so many tarot card readings. And I found them to be quite accurate. Yeah, it's kind of scary actually.
When you shared that little anecdote, like it reminded me of this thing that happened. Wow, it was a while back. Growing up super religious, I was told to never ever mess with these things. But I had my first ever tarot card reading. It was from a guy I met on Grindr.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to hook up. Went into his room. He had some tarot cards. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never had a tarot card reading. And we ended up sitting down and having the most wholesome, spiritual, like I'm crying, he's crying. And we're like holding each other, like sisters supporting each other. And like, these are your cards. And this is what your card means. And I was like, yeah.
Was that not life-changing?
It was.
Yeah.
On Grindr, no less.
By the way, happy 15 years to Grindr.
Wow.
A couple of months back. Yeah. It's been kind of a cornerstone in you know, modern gay life, yeah. I would say. Like, you know, it's really revolutionized the way people meet each other. I actually have quite a few good friends that I met on Grindr first. Like, yeah. Yes, I mean, a lot of people say that, oh, apps like that are just for sex or whatever, but I completely disagree.
Oh, it's at the end of the day, you know, people are people. If we treat each other as people, then we will behave as people.
And that's not to say that it's, I mean, some people obviously use it for, you know, a very carnal outlet. And that's totally fine. Sometimes it doesn't work out, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, okay. And let's make the best out of this situation. And in your case, it was that whole, like, you know, epiphany you got from tarot cards.
Yeah, you get what you put out.
Yeah.
End of the day, right? So if you look for that, then you'll find it. But if I remember having some incredibly wholesome conversations with people on Grindr that would first talk to me a certain way and then be like, hey, you know, I really like if you could just be yourself, you know, and then they like snap back to being themselves and not doing the Grindr conduct. We end up encouraging each other and then they open up with their insecurities and I open up my insecurities. So, because they always say like Grindr is here is meant for this, or like Jacked is for this, or Tinder's for this, or Coffee Meets Bagels for that. You know, people are people. If we remember that, they're people before their profiles.
For sure.
Yeah.
There's a certain like tenor to each of these apps.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, it is very sexually charged. Like you can't deny that. I'm just in the language, like, you know, with a lot of people. I mean, even when you log on and you see like, you know, it's mostly just like bodies, right?
Yeah.
Or some people don't even say hello, right? You know, it's, as they say, different strokes, different folks.
Yeah.
Or different folks, different strokes. Either way.
We don't judge.
Do you want the folks first or the strokes first?
We don't judge.
We don't judge.
Yeah.
Of course not. In fact, we stroke along.
We have
when you're stroking mama, mama stroking you.
I don't know where that came from.
A place of talent? It came from God. It's God's gift.
By that, she means her diaphragm.
Not everybody can sing. Not everybody has that.
But we appreciate people who try.
I don't know why I'm laughing, because my voice is so like hammered. And I really think my voice has changed dramatically since COVID. Since I first got COVID. It's just never been the same again.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's like some sort of like long COVID symptom. So it's definitely taken on more like raspy quality in recent years.
Maybe we should listen back to the first episode of the SG Boys and try to like compare your voice.
Oh, absolutely. Roll the tapes.
That new gay podcast from Singapore. That new gay podcast from Singapore.
I kind of like that. Can one more?
Okay. So I don't do new?
Yeah. Feel like, because if we're going to use that intro again and again, right, it gets a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Right,
sometimes. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll get to first impressions in a bit.
Confirm, I already know. You can see, do you hear like the clarity there? Like it's just a lot more, I don't know.
But we gotta compare like Samjo on a good day, you know, like you just did Violent Karaoke, so it's not fair to you.
No. I've been resting for a few days already, but my voice for a while has been like that for a while, right? I've just come to accept that, you know, I mean, our voices change also as we age, right? You know, I mean, you listen to all those singers. Look at me calling myself a singer. When you're in your 20s versus your early 30s versus like, you know, your mid 30s.
Yeah.
Just where I am now.
Yeah.
I feel like our voices just mature lah. Like there's some songs that I just can't sing the way I used to sing anymore. You know, I used to be able to sing like When We Were Young.
Ooh.
By Adele in original key. So fun.
I don't
but
think,
no, I can't.
I don't think all hope is lost. I think if you went for a little bit of vocal training, you warm up a little bit.
Yeah.
I do think it is possible to
recover. But the way I sing will be different also. It's just not, I'm not upset actually, because I kind of like embracing my lower register a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a baritone actually.
Ah.
Even when I was an acapella in college, I never really did. Because my speaking voice is relatively higher than a lot of other guys. So a lot of people assume that I'm a tenor. But no.
You just got tenor attitude.
Yeah. Such is life. What are you? You're a tenor, right?
I'm a tenor, but I used to be part of alto, which is more of a feminine, like lower register for
even higher, yeah.
But mainly because we didn't have enough guys in the choir. And I genuinely wanted to be in a choir because I watched Sister Act.
Right.
And that was it. I just wanted to join choir because it's Sister Act. And then everyone was like, oh my God, you're gay. And I didn't know what gay was. I just wanted to be in Sister Act.
I see why you are Christian. I've never been religious, but I remember watching Sister Act 1 and 2, right, on LD back in the day.
Laser discs.
I remember thinking, oh my God, church is so fun.
It's Catholic church.
Catholic church, but without even like understanding what religion was.
Mm-hmm.
I was so young. I was in primary school.
Yeah. I don't think any of us, when we were kids, even in church, you know, growing up, going to Sunday school, really knew what anything was about. And that was something that I realized, especially when I was in that church in Tokyo for that Baptist church, because of the message that day itself. It was a lead up to Easter. I realized that, hey, I remember reading this verse, because like when I was a kid, I had to memorize Bible verses. And I remember getting like top in class for like catechism class. And I would memorize everything, and I was very good at that. I had no idea what grace was until I lived a needed grace myself. You know, like I had no idea what love was. I didn't understand a lot of the things that I was told to memorize as a kid.
Yeah.
That now as an adult, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this verse. I remember memorizing this verse. I didn't know what it meant. I wasn't grown.
Yeah.
So it's almost like there's like a rediscovering of my faith.
Yeah. Which is why I'm personally of the opinion that, sure, I understand why kids are exposed to religion, why certain people would want to expose kids to religion at a young age. But especially based on what you just told us, how much of it's going to fly over their heads? How much of it's more meaningful, like when you explore religion on your own as an adult, right? And then decide for yourself, because then you really have all the faculties to kind of like make sense of all of it. It could be you figuring things out existentially, you figuring things out, your moral conscience and your consciousness just falling into place, and you deciding, okay, this is the person that I want to be, like, you know, what's going to be my guidance?
Yeah.
You know, is it religion? Is it another religion? Is it Michelle Williams? You know?
Not Michelle Williams.
Yeah. Do you know why I say Michelle Williams, right? Because she actually sang one of my favorite Christian songs. Even though I'm not Christian, but this is the one song that maybe might make me want to go to church.
Okay.
Say yes.
Say yes.
When Jesus say yes, nobody can say no. When Jesus say yes, nobody can say no. And get this, it's Michelle Williams featuring Beyonce and Kelly Rowland.
Wow.
Yes.
How the tables have turned in the eyes of the Lord.
When Jesus say yes, nobody can say no. When Jesus say yes, nobody can say no.
I was going to say, holy moly, but that's not what Christians say, right? Amen.
You think Christians say holy moly in church?
No, I just...
In unison.
It came out wrong. I was so happy to see Michelle Williams, the underdog of Destiny's Child, taking the lead and taking point on this one. Beyonce, what you got to say? Kelly, what you got to say? You know? And she was like, she was holding her own.
I'm grateful that there was that path that was introduced to me when I was very young. The same way when we go to school, we learn a lot about like geography and physics and chemistry and stuff. And it's not until you're actually like out in the open and then you really like realize what needs to be applied, or you really like learn more about the world and the state of the world. You know, like we all did social studies when we were in school, or history. You know, I never really cared about it. Now I'm doing deep dives into things that I was actually taught. We were all taught, because I was watching Oppenheimer. And
amazing, right?
It put me back in that place where I was like, I remember learning about this, but I didn't know this perspective, or death didn't mean as much to me when I was a kid. It gives me a chance to now revisit a lot of these things. And I'm having that resolution with Christianity as well, you know. But I do think when people kind of like shove it down your throat, and it's the same for school, it's the same sometimes with religion as well, where it's like, hey, you have to memorize this. And if you memorize this, then you are accepted, you know. That sometimes can backfire a bit.
Yeah. It's just trickier when it comes to religion, just because there's the added, like, you know, moral compass that a lot of people, you know, sometimes interpret in a very misguided way.
Yeah.
And by extension, also impose on others. And that's what I meant by, like, you know, I'm not sure if, you know, when you're at such an impressionable young age, if it's something that should be absorbed at all. I don't know. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Mm.
You know, tell me what you think.
Only from my perspective and my journey, I'm grateful that that was there, but grateful as well that I managed to like feel like I can also revisit it and have my own mature new look at a lot of these things.
I'm guessing like your religion also informed a lot of your music early on.
I mean,
Sister Act is one of them. Do you have a very formative memory of how, you know, that kind of got you interested in music? Because so much about you, you know, lives and breathes music, right?
We were cautioned about Sister Act.
Oh, really?
Because it's not Protestant, it's not Christian, it's Catholic.
Right.
And it's also mixing secular music, what we call secular music and the church together, hip-hopifying it, making it cool, which was very, at least for the denomination that I grew up with, it was definitely not that. Like, we couldn't even have an electric guitar in the church, you know, and it's not even an acoustic guitar, it's a classical guitar. So, like, we were very, very strict. No Harry Potter, no Pokemon, everything's of the devil. We could watch Sister Act 2. I never watched Sister Act 1, which is a much better film, until in my teenage years. One had them going to Vegas. They had like gun shootouts at the start.
Oh yeah, there was a whole crime scene at the start.
Yeah.
Because it showed how she was a showgirl first before she put on the
habit. Exactly, whereas Sister Act 2 starts in school. You know, it's like, it's very, very like people singing together, forming a choir. So it was a lot more wholesome content for the family. But the music that I listened to was a lot of chamber music. So it was a lot of organ, Charlotte Church.
Oh my goodness.
If you remember Charlotte Church.
Yeah, Charlotte Church, who started off so pure and angelic and like wholesome. And then do you remember she had this whole like conversion to pop and secular music?
That's the unfortunate thing, because a lot of them feel like they have to fit that mold at the start, and then that leads to them completely breaking out. And then
gave us a great gem though, honestly, her singing versus when she eventually like found her own. What was that song? Was it like Crazy Chick or something?
I don't know. Yeah.
And then eventually she hosted her own talk show, and she got all these musical guests on.
Really?
And one of my favorite videos that I used to loop all the time was when Amy Winehouse went on her show. She was like super drunk. And they sang together. They sang Michael Jackson's Beat It.
Really?
And it was like, Beat It! Beat It! And Charlotte was just like beating it, and she was really nailing it. Like, you know, she was giving her powerhouse vocals. Poor Amy was like, you know, she was slurring her lines away.
No.
Yeah, and it was I think sadly, you know, the beginning of the end for her. But
yeah, I've not said the name Charlotte Church in decades. But yeah, it was a lot of chamber music, not a lot of pop music.
So then how did you make your Charlotte Church equivalent of a pivot? From church to secular music.
Because I guess similar to Charlotte Church, I also broke free.
Oh.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of things that I was not exposed to, a lot of things that I was told no to.
Right.
And when I discovered all the other sounds, the other genres, the other ways of creating music, where music does not have to just be with an organ or a piano. It doesn't have to be all praise and worship. That was when I completely lost my mind. The first time I saw the Spice Girls on TV, I was blown away because they looked so badass. But yeah, I became very curious and I wanted to know everything that I was not exposed to. And that's how I became such a big pop culture nerd and memorized everything, was because I was like, oh, I was memorizing all these things at church. And I was told I cannot consume anything else. And then now there's this whole other world that I was not exposed to. So I'm going to apply that same methodology. So I'm going to memorize everything the same way I used to memorize Bible verses. So I'll like pull CDs out. I won't be able to afford to buy it. And my parents wouldn't buy it for me. But I would just memorize. Like, this is how it looks. Her name is Janet Jackson.
Right. And slowly but surely, you kind of like piece together this little secular world of music.
Which also led to that rift between my parents and I, because it was like, oh, he's been rebelling like that since he was a kid, and now he's doing entertainment, now he's going into radio, now he's performing, and he wants us to go, we're not gonna go because we don't approve, you know. Right. So it was years and years and years of rebelling and not doing the thing that they want me to do, you know. And they would always be like, oh, we're praying for you, you know. It's like, I'm fine actually. This whole Tokyo trip was like full circle for me.
I guess there'll always be people telling you, when you're a kid or at any point in your life, really, even when you're grown as adult, that, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be listening to that. You shouldn't be checking out Charlotte Church because she became a crazy chick. I'm not being derogatory, guys. I'm like referencing her single from, her album, Tissues and Issues.
You say it like Kennedy. Kennedy says that.
Tissues and Issues. Yeah, it's an homage to our dear Michelle Williams.
How did Michelle come back in the conversation?
I just try to bring it back to Michelle. Kennedy is our Michelle Williams.
That's he does not agree to that. I can tell you right now.
Who does he think he is then?
Do we really have to guess?
He's definitely not Beyonce.
I would gladly be Michelle.
Oh, I was gonna say like I'm Michelle.
You're not Michelle.
I think you're Beyonce la. You're like
not Beyonce.
You're like the ringleader, like, you know, like this entire podcast is.
I would say you're more Beyonce than I am.
No, you're a ringleader. This was your idea.
Wait, but we agreed that there is no hierarchy anymore.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It is not a Beyonce followed by Kelly followed by Michelle shit anymore. From on, everyone's Michelle. Beyonce's like, I didn't sign up for that shit.
Actually, honestly, right, do you want to be Beyonce now? I think it's super stressful to be her now. I mean it's great to have all the money, like, but I don't know. I think I'm good being Michelle, actually.
I'm good being Josh.
But then again, I've never been like a super ambitious person, so
I'm would happy. You ever trade places with anyone else? I mean, now that you brought that up, you know, like, because I just say I'd rather be Josh, right? Mm. And it doesn't come from like a prideful place. We're jogging my memory, you know, going back to when I was a kid and I wanted to be anything but Josh.
Wow.
Like, I didn't want to be Josh. With my parents, with church, even on Grindr, I didn't want to be me. I didn't. And I really, really am very okay with being Josh. I really like being Josh. If you could switch, would you?
I think just for the fun of it, yes. I'm definitely content with where I am now. There are obviously a lot of areas where, you know, life can get better. And like I said, like, you know, I'm also a work in progress, right? So I acknowledge that I'm not perfect and everything. But no, I love being myself. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to have Beyonce's money.
See, I was going to say I would switch bank accounts.
Yeah. You know, I mean, she could just even like, let's never talk about switching. She could just give me like 1%. 1% of a bank account. I would have no complaints. I have no complaints. I'll buy all her albums.
I'm Joshua Simon.
I'm Sam Joe.
And we are
the SG Boys,
that little gay podcast from Singapore.
Subscribe and find us on Instagram at the SG Boys.
The beliefs, views, and opinions expressed on this podcast are attributable to its hosts only and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, organization, company, or individual.